In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Time for us to talk movies and more as Alan Adams joins us in studio for Pass the Popcorn. And Alan brought his entourage to the studio today. You came in, you said, something going on in the parking lot out there. Man, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, there's like three or four cars out there. There's people everywhere. There's an officer of the law. I don't know what's going on.
But I swear it's nothing I did.
I can't imagine. If it was something you did, I would assume they would have come in at some point.
Right, right.
So, yeah, no, I just rolled up and I'm like, wow, this is much busier than this parking lot usually is. But, I'm sure everything's fine.
Right. We have not heard any sound of yelling or screaming.
Nope, no loud noises.
Actually, people look like they're having some kind of a cordial time out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's probably going to wind up being like somebody had car trouble and then somebody came to help with the car trouble and then someone else came. But I'm not going to ask because I don't really care that much.
No, I don't either. But I just want to make sure they're behaving themselves because my back, and this is what I don't like, ever since Carrie left, my back is to the door.
I'm not comfortable with that.
As you know, when I go out places, if I go to a restaurant or a place to enjoy a beverage or two, I want to be in that gunfighter seat. I want my back to the wall to be able to see what's coming at me.
Well, you want to be able to survey the situation.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, I totally get it.
And all I get here is weird reflections in the glass. It's not the same.
It is not. It is
no
not.
Idea. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I was telling you off air. I went down. Sheridan and I went down to Freeport. Our nephew was in a school play, a production of Snow White and the 47 Dwarves. it was something.
And you told me he brought some special nuance to the role of Tippy.
I'm sorry, Trippy.
Trippy.
Trippy, which when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, well, that's surprisingly sophisticated for a kid's play. No, it just means he falls down a lot. I will say he fell down with panache and aplomb. He really hit the deck. And then rolled around a bit and then popped up and did it all over again.
Bless his
heart. There's something about watching theater with kids that age, particularly a school play with, you know, a cast of thousands. Yeah. Those moments where, we've reached the point where no one's quite sure who talks next or what they're supposed to say when they do. And that's, frankly, a delight.
Now, how old is he?
He's 11.
Oh, okay.
But it's a range. So yeah. I think 9 to 12 or something like that. So
are they young enough that occasionally, I always love this when you see the youngsters that there'll always be someone who is waving from the stage to a parent.
A lot of waving. A lot of peeking through the curtain.
Oh yes, yes.
And some kids, it's like. Some kids are loud and some kids are not.
Right.
But it was just really sweet. And, you know, it's obviously like theater is such a huge part of my life. And so seeing the younger ones engage with it in whatever capacity, I think it's really nice. And, you know, whether it's something he continues doing, I don't know. If this is it, he'll always have Trippy the Dwarf. and it was nice too because on Saturday night I did have a chance to get over to Orono and see the True North Theater production of Once Upon a Bride There Was a Forest,
which was really
nice, and I figured we would actually maybe talk about that
I want to hear about it.
Directed by Trisha Hobbs, who also designed the set, lighting designed by Scout Howe. Some of the usual suspects as far as True North is concerned, Telly Kulong, Mark Billick, Angela Bonacassa, like just a wonderful collection of talent. And man, you know, I tell you, like one of the real joys, I think, of the current, performing arts climate in this town is we have a lot of groups. And again, like the arts are struggling, and I'm not dismissing that by any stretch of the imagination. But in terms of what's being produced, like there really is kind of something for everyone right now. You know what I mean? And it hasn't always been that way. And so to see like a group like True North, who has really made a habit of doing some really interesting work. This is a fascinating piece. A whiff of Eurydice about it. It's the story about a young woman. Her long-term boyfriend asks her to marry him. She says, yes, but, and she wants to go and find her father, her long lost father, before committing to this. She wants him to walk her down the aisle. She wants the whole shebang. But what happens is she winds up maybe finding him. I'm not going to go too much into detail as far as the plot, because there are a lot of sort of twists and turns. But suffice it to say, you think it is going to be one kind of story. It then becomes a very different kind of story, and then yet again becomes an even different kind of story, which is always fascinating to me. I really like it when a story is fluid like that. It doesn't hurt that you've got some really talented performers. Angela's always great. Moira Beal plays the lead. She does a lovely job. I'm a big fan of Telly Coulon's work. He's someone who I think I've always felt a bit of a kindred spirit with Telly. And so seeing him back on the True North stage after a pretty extended absence, he's been doing some behind the scenes stuff, but he hasn't been on stage in a while. So that was really cool. And then I made a point of mentioning this to her on the night, but I don't know, cause I'm someone who has a real deep affection for the Pavilion Theater on the Humane campus. I love that space. And I don't know that there's anyone who has as solid an understanding of that space like Trisha Hobbs does. Between her design work and her direction, she just embraces that space and all its quirks in a way that just makes for such compelling, such a compelling theatrical experience. So yeah, honestly, it's weird, but weird in a fun way. It's thoughtful, but not too overly dense. It's just a really nice piece of theater, and one that I hope that people will go see. They've got one more weekend. They're running Friday, Saturday, Sunday there at the Pavilion. I believe the actual address is 6 Sebago Road, but it's the weird octagonal building behind the library. You can't miss it if you go up there. And I have to say, if you have the opportunity, you really should check it out, because again, it's really a wonderful piece.
Well, that sounds great. Fantastic. Have you seen any movies?
I did see a movie, just the one, but man, it was a good one. Disney Plus has a documentary. It's called Jim Henson Idea Man.
Oh, this is the Ron Howard documentary. Yeah.
Ron Howard directed. And as soon as I knew that this was happening, I'm like, okay, let's go, because I ride hard for the Muppets, hard. I grew up with them. I came of age right at what I would consider perhaps peak Sesame Street in terms of where they were at, because they were still showing the early episodes along with the new ones. And so I had this wonderful exposure to the Muppets, through Sesame Street. And then I get a little bit older and there's the Muppet Show. And that was in syndication when I was growing up. And so I saw a lot of it. And I mean, if I'm going to be real about it, the Muppet Show in a lot of ways shaped me fundamentally, certainly in terms of my sense of humor. Honestly, there are far worse mentors.
I just watched Muppets Take Manhattan the other night, and I had not seen it in probably 20 years, and I had forgotten how great it was.
It's all of it. It's so good. And so watching this movie where basically we get to sort of a soup to nuts with Jim Henson, it was really fascinating, because... Again, and this, I feel this comes up every cycle or whatever, but it's wild how many people don't know what an anarchist weirdo Jim Henson was.
Oh, and what the Muppets did in their first incarnation.
There's
Avenue Q didn't just come out of nowhere.
Right. That's the thing. It's Dirty Muppets. It's you people have no idea.
Yeah.
So from the early days, the Salmon Friends stuff, the Wilkins coffee ads,
yeah.
uh, And then, you know, the stuff they did on Saturday Night Live. Like, people forget that the Muppets were a part of the early days of Saturday Night Live.
The original cast.
Although, although one of the things that comes up in the documentary is it Michael Donahue?
Yes.
They talk about how much he absolutely loathed writing for the Muppets. Just hated it. Hated every minute of it. And it's just like, oh, okay. So it's like that. But yeah. And just this wonderful collection of archival interviews with the man himself, along with some talking head stuff with folks who have real connections, whether you're talking about, like, a lot of stuff with Frank Oz, which is great, like, who started with Henson when he was, like, 17. Wow. Like, he was a kid.
Wow.
Like, he was a kid when he started working. And, you know, and, like, it's wild to think about, because Frank Oz has become a very successful, very accomplished filmmaker. And he got started making movies because, I want to say it was the Muppet movie, Henson was directing, and he was like, hey, Frank, you want to help with this? And that was kind of it. And then like this whole sort of like whole new path opened up for him. And we're lucky to have it because he's produced some really wonderful work.
Yeah.
But like, you know, so talking to Frank Oz, talking to some of the former puppeteers, talking to Henson's children, you know, they bring in Jennifer Connelly at one point, to talk Labyrinth. And just, it was just so compelling to watch the stuff from the early days and just watching and sort of going along on the journey as he sort of almost reluctantly became this huge star, to the point where, you know, I like the wild and instant success of Sesame Street, like that was a thing that I think sort of rubbed him the wrong way. Like, he didn't want to be viewed as simply a programmer of, you know, a producer of children's entertainment.
Right.
Because that's not what the Muppets were.
No.
You know, and the fact that they were able to translate to that medium, I think speaks highly of the artistry and the sophistication, I think, that Henson and company brought to the table. You know, and then you see the stuff with like the Creature Factory being built. And, you know, and all these successes leading him to be able to take wild swings, like I mentioned Labyrinth, but like the Dark Crystal,
Fraggle Rock,
like Jim Henson's Storytellers, which a lot of people will argue is the best work he ever produced. Like, just all this stuff, just this wild collection of incredible material. And then, you know, at age, 53, just gone.
Yeah.
Just gone. You know, for reasons that it sure sounds like it could have been avoided with just a little bit more care.
Yeah.
Which makes it all the sadder, I think. You know, there are those who argue that, you know, his family's background in Christian Science may have contributed to his reluctance to go to the doctor. The people closest to him were like, no, it wasn't like that. Like, if he felt sick, he would go to the doctor. He didn't do maintenance. Like that sort of thing. But again, you know, you don't know what could have happened. So it's hard to say what might have been. But you just seeing the legacy just sort of laid out like that. It was just fascinating. And as I said, someone who really just adores the Muppets, like getting to watch that evolution as, you know, as certain characters kind of like move to the forefront. Like early, like in the early days, like Kermit was just another puppet.
Right.
You know, it was just, it's just funny how, the character clearly was meant to be. And so sort of just forced its way to the forefront, without anyone really pushing, I guess. I think that's really fascinating. But I mean, so much of the story is just so compelling, listening to people talk about his familial relationships, and you know, he loved his family and he loved his work, and that was enough for the guy.
Yeah. And what they were able to do, I mean, part of it, I think, owed a debt to like the Warner Brothers cartoons, because they always operated on two levels, something the kids could love, but the adults had a whole separate storyline that was aimed at them. But to make those puppets seem so real, even as adults. You know, you sit there and talk about willful suspension of disbelief. You forget there's a guy underneath pulling the strings and making the movements.
Yeah, you absolutely do. It's, you know, and it's always funny when you get the sort of like the candid shots or whatever. And it's like you're reminded, oh, like all these human actors, they're standing on 3-foot platforms. So there's room for the puppeteers. Yeah. Like you just forget that that's how it's structured because, again, they are so imbued with character that it doesn't matter that they're all felt in ping pong balls. Yeah. Like it doesn't matter.
I remember we had the songwriter Paul Williams on and he talked about writing Rainbow Connection. And he said, when I was working with Jim Henson and writing that for Kermit, I was absolutely convinced that Kermit was as real as any human being I know.
Of course. And that's why we're still talking about the Muppets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's why they are such a cultural touchstone because of that, that grounded sense, like even at their wildest and weirdest, like there's a foundation of genuine emotion, to the Muppets that just makes them, eternal. Like they're like the Muppets will be with us forever. And as it should be, because they're just delightful in every possible way.
Favorite Muppet character?
Whew, man, that's a tough one. That is a tough one. I will say Kermit's kind of a dull answer. I love Kermit, but like Kermit aside, there's something really endearing about watching a hacky comedian go up there every time, convinced this is gonna be the time.
Yes.
And so yeah, like Fozzie Bear, man. Yeah. Like that's like that. You're my dude, Fozzie. Like we've all bombed. Like we all know what that feels like. And the fact that he's able to keep going is just chef's kiss.
Fozzie Bear and I love anything associated with Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem.
Oh man, that show, the docuseries that they did earlier this year, I can't remember. Mayhem. That was a delight. I don't know that it landed with everybody the way it landed with me. But again, as I said, I go hard for the Muppets. You want to give me a behind the music style story about Dr. Teeth? Let's go.
Hello. So that's on Disney Plus.
It is on Disney Plus.
All right. Awesome. Hey, thank you, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure.
Good to see you. As always, good luck getting out. Hopefully it's settled down out
there.
Yeah,
fingers crossed. The police tape's not out.
It's Alan Adams talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn.